I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. On Christmas Eve, 1914, in the middle of intense fighting on the Western Front, German, French, and Scottish soldiers spontaneously declared a truce. For a few hours, they laid down their arms, shared food and drink, sang songs, gathered their dead, and took a break from the horrors of trench warfare. Opera Philadelphia, formerly the Opera Company of Philadelphia, co-produced the 2012 Pulitzer Prize-winning opera Silent Night, imagining this night and its impact on the lives of these enemy soldiers. Silent Night is having its East Coast premiere tonight at the Academy of Music in Philadelphia, part of Opera Philadelphia's season, and it runs through February 17th. It had its world premiere in Minneapolis in 2011, performed by the Minnesota Opera, the other producer of Silent Night. And we have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studios. Bill Burden is a New Jersey-born, Princeton-based tenor who debuted the role of the drafted opera singer Nicholas Sprink in the Minnesota Opera's production of Silent Night. He'll be performing tonight as well. And Bill Burden, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's great to be here, Mike.
How did I do with Sprink?
Sprink, absolutely perfect.
Very good. Kevin Putz is the composer recipient of the 2012 Pulitzer Prize for Silent Night, and he's a member of the composition faculty at the Peabody Institute in Baltimore, Maryland. And Kevin Putz, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well. Nice to have you here. Also with us is Mark Campbell. He's the librettist for this Pulitzer Prize winning Silent Night. He's received many awards, including two Richard Rogers Awards, a Rockefeller Foundation Award, and a Grammy nomination for the Wolf Trap recording of Volpone. And Mark Campbell, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
Let me begin with you, Kevin, if I could, because I know this is, you've written symphonies, you've written concertos. This was really your first opera, and you had to compose for the human voice. How big a leap was that for you?
It was somewhat of a leap. First, I apologize for my voice is cold-ridden.
Sorry to hear that.
But I think I'll make it through the next hour. I've written actually a lot of concertos for wind and string instruments. And you sort of treat those instruments the same way that you treat the voice, in a lyrical way. And you imagine singing the lines. And in fact, those instrumentalists they often use singing analogies to learn how to play. So, I love Mozart, and Mozart's concertos actually were very similar to his arias and his operas. So I think that I approached it from a lyrical point of view. And the nice thing is that you can at least attempt, even though I'm no Bill Burden, you can at least attempt to sing it yourself and to make some music of a line. And so it's a little easier to imagine than it is, say, to write something for violin where you can't play the instrument at all. But it's writing for voice is something that I'm continuing to learn.
And how about for you, Mark? I know you've written for musicals. I don't know, was this new for you to write for an opera?
No, actually. I had written musicals, and then in 2002 I became a librettist with my first opera, which was Volpone for Wolf Trap. And so this was... I've lost track, actually, but it's like the eighth or ninth opera that I've written. And I think it was very interesting because it was Kevin's first opera, but it was a really good pairing to bring someone seasoned and old like myself into this collaboration.
You don't look quite that old.
Thank you. But it was an important dynamic to creating this opera.
And you never worked together before, right? The two of you.
No, we hadn't. We were matched. Is he okay?
He's having a hard time there, Kevin.
I don't want a dead composer on opening night.
We might get nervous.
I'm fine. I'm back.
Okay.
That may happen again, but go ahead.
Okay. It's good for the opera. Good publicity. Kevin and I had never met. We were matched by Dale Johnson at Minnesota Opera. And fortunately, it turned out to be the best collaboration I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah,
I mean, did you know that from the get-go?
I knew from the get-go that I liked Kevin a great deal. We didn't really talk. Our first meeting, we had a bottle of wine, and we talked about politics and something about music and everything but opera. And I think it was at the end of the dinner that Kevin said, yeah, so I guess we're doing this, right? And I said, yeah, I think we are. But then it was just a joyful experience to hear the music that he was coming up with to the libretto. It was unbelievable.
And we're going to play some music. Let me get you in on the conversation, Bill. Now, you play a very important character in this opera. How were you introduced to Silent Night?
Well, I was chosen by the Minnesota Opera, actually. We were all hired separately. brought together to collaborate on this incredible piece. And my character is Nicholas Sprink, as you said, and he is a German opera singer who is conscripted into the German army and actually is able to sort of cope with war through his singing and precipitates the truce that we see in the piece.
His lover, is that the right word? Anna Sorensen?
Anna Sorensen, yeah.
And she, too, was an opera singer.
She, too, was an opera singer, and they are a somewhat famous opera couple in the story who have traveled throughout all of the capitals of Europe together. And they are separated by this terrible war, but brought back together again that Christmas Eve.
And is this based on a real character?
Well, it's based on a series of characters.
This is important to mention. This story is based on a movie called Joyeux Noël that was produced by Nordwest Productions. And so all of these characters, it's based on a real event, but this is a fictionalized account of that the movie came up with.
Yeah. And how did you think about this character? How did you imagine him?
Well, originally it was pretty easy for me because I am an opera singer, so I got to sort of be myself. However, throw into the mix this incredible experience, this war that no one up to that point had ever experienced. World War I was a turning point in the history of warfare. And so you add all those layers of incredible, just dramatic craziness. I mean, it was just it went beyond anything anyone could imagine, and it creates then characters that are beyond anything we'd imagine.
Well, let's listen. And this is from the 2011 Minnesota Opera Productions of production, I should say, of Silent Night. The opera begins with an opera within an opera, and we hear you, William Burden, as the tenor Nicholas Sprink, and Karin
Wolverton
as the soprano Anna Sorensen. And you are, as you said, internationally famous singers, lovers off stage. And this is on the stage of a Berlin opera house mid-scene in the performance. And a German general actually bursts on stage to tell you that you are drafted to fight for the fatherland. But let's listen to this duet. That's a duet from Silent Night featuring our guest, William Burden. Now, you're singing in German.
Yes. Obviously, actually, that part is in Italian.
Because you're in an opera. Okay.
Right. So
Which means we have three languages going in this opera.
Well, actually, five.
Five.
There's a total of five. It's French, English, German, Italian, and some Latin thrown in the mix.
And when we heard that, what are you and Anna singing about?
It is a completely original sort of classical opera piece, a duet about the soprano is lamenting her love who is away at war, and he returns on this very evening to spend a single night with her. So it is incredibly prescient to the rest of the story.
Indeed. And you composed this, Kevin.
I did compose it. It was fun. As soon as I saw in the libretto that lights up on a Berlin opera house, an opera in the style of Mozart or Gluck, I said, oh, great, here I go.
I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I mean, when I was starting to compose when I was, 12 years old or so, living in a small town in Michigan, I wrote music in the style of Mozart, and I thought people could do that. I thought that's what people do. You know, why not? You can have a career doing that. Oh, I wasn't thinking of a career at that time. So anyway, it was really fun to sort of be as authentic as I could and to, you know, try to emulate this music, which I revere. So I studied every aspect of it, you know, the orchestration and the singing style, and it was fun to create a sort of fake opera.
Mm. To begin this particular opera. Now, as you said, Bill, we're talking about five different languages in one opera. Are you conversant in those, Mark? How do you do that?
I can order.
You can order
in each.
You can order in Latin.
Except Scottish, I guess. I can order in Latin.
Yeah,
you know, the probably BLT. Have.
Yeah, right.
Latin America.
I can see why you two got along. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, we turn into a comedy.
Yeah, I can see this.
Without liquor.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I made a decision early on that I wanted the opera to be in five languages. And the reason is because as a writer, you look for obstacles in, you know, in communication and how... What can you put in characters' ways, in the ways of characters that they cannot speak? And opera allows us to have five languages because there will be captions. There will be super titles. And I don't know. I just thought it would be a lot more fun.
Really?
Yeah. And further, I did not want a German commander singing in like a Hogan's Heroes accent or a Pepe Le Pew French accent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It would just be so... hokey and unauthentic, and so it was fun for me. The process was that I would do my bad French and my bad German, and then send it to my translators, and they would either laugh or say, "Ah, yeah, very good." and then it was handed to Kevin. Now Kevin had the much more difficult task because setting those languages is a whole different thing than writing them.
Well, because each of those languages has a different kind of music,
doesn't it? Yeah, musical cadence,
yeah.
Right?
Right, that's right. Different rhythm, different stresses, you know, have to be on different syllables. And it was really unclear to me where they should fall. And I had someone read all of it for me into a tape recorder, and I would just listen over and over. And even in the listening, it wasn't clear all the time. And in fact, we're still finding things that could be shifted a little bit. Yeah, it's hard to get it exactly right.
And which was the hardest language for you to work with?
I would say the German, just from because I don't know any German. I know French a little bit, but setting French musically is a different story. I had to study a little Debussy and Massenet a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Our guests are composer Kevin Putz, librettist Mark Campbell, and tenor William Burden, and we are talking about Silent Night. It won the Pulitzer Prize last year, 2012, and Opera Philadelphia, formerly known as the Opera Company of Philadelphia, is premiering this opera on the East Coast. In fact, it's at the Academy of Music tonight. It runs through February 17th. We're going to talk some more, play some more music. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. 52 years ago, the Philadelphia chromosome was discovered in a Fox Chase laboratory. The Philadelphia chromosome was the first specific genetic abnormality linked to a specific cancer. Fast forward to today, and Fox Chase is offering a new diagnostic test for advanced cancers. Through next-generation DNA sequencing, tumor-specific genetic abnormalities now can be matched to precision drugs. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, now part of Temple Health.
I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and we want to end this winter membership drive today, and we can do that when you make a pledge of support. This week on Radio Times, Al Gore and Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey were our guests. We also talked about the fiscal crisis, dogs, cats, school closures in Philadelphia, the roots of the Vietnam War, soul food, and today, the debate over drones and an interview about the Pulitzer Prize-winning opera Silent Night. That's one program here at WHYY and just 1 week's worth of interviews. That's what we do. Now, here's what you need to do. Pick up the phone and make a call right now and make a pledge at 1-888-345-9499. You can also pledge online at whyy.org. For a $60 pledge, we will send you the delightful and very cool-looking Radio Times anniversary mug designed by Pulitzer Prize winner Tony Auth. You decide what this news and information is worth and make a call. 1-888-345-9499, whyy.org. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We're talking about the making of the Pulitzer Prize-winning opera Silent Night. And our guests are Bill Burden. He's a tenor. In fact, performed when Silent Night had its debut, the Minnesota Opera's 2011 production of Silent Night. And he's going to be performing at the Academy of Music for Opera Philadelphia. Also with us, Kevin Putz, and he is the composer recipient of this Pulitzer Prize for Silent Night. And the librettist is with us as well, Mark Campbell. And we're going to play some more music. But let me go back to you, Mark Campbell. As you said, this is based in part on a movie that was made about a real event that happened back in 1914. How much did you draw from just the language of the movie for this opera?
Oh, well, I had to draw a lot, actually, because the movie company had to have approval over the libretto. So I couldn't deviate too much. Unfortunately, movies in general don't have act twos. They don't have an intermission that and then give a reason at the end of act one for an audience to come back. So I deviated a lot from the screenplay in the creation of act two. Bill Burden's character, Nicholas Sprink, has a major moment that is not in the movie. It takes a few seconds to dispatch this story. In the opera, it really becomes the climax of Act Two.
And can you tell us what that is? Or is that giving too much away?
It doesn't give that much away. I mean, he basically, with Anna, he deserts to the French side.
Right. And just to underscore, as something you said, Bill, earlier, which is that World War II was, I mean, all wars are terrible, but this was a particularly gruesome war, the kind of trench warfare where people lived in these trenches and shot each other, and there were dead people all around them.
There were terrible technological advances in weaponry that happened in World War I and moved forward then from that point on. And so this war was really unlike anything that had been fought before. And what is remarkable about this piece is that we explore these incredible moments of humanity in it. And that's the scene that I get to play in Act Two is one of those moments.
I should say that moment was added once I understood that Bill Burden was playing the role.
Oh, is that right?
I thought we need a good tenor aria here, and so Mark made more of the moment. I think
I made more of the moment, but originally it was Anna's moment.
Was it really?
It was both you and Dale said, "Oh yeah, Bill Burden's going to be doing this." And I was like, "Well, we can't have him just fade out." And he doesn't. Yeah. And Nicholas Sprink doesn't have a big moment. One thing I want to mention is how easily all of this came together because of Minnesota and the New Works Initiative and the way they helped nurture this piece. It made the collaboration very easy. It made making changes, revisions, extremely easy, and everyone was so collaborative there. Like all the whispers we would get in our ears were helpful.
And it was Dale Johnson, the artistic director, really this is sort of his baby. I mean, his idea. Mm-hmm. He saw this film and he thought, this would make a great opera. And then he started looking for a composer. It wasn't sort of, what do you want to write? It was like, do you want to write Joie
this
and Noël? Right. So I said I would. Yeah.
And for you, Mark, how much research did you do on this Christmas Eve truce? And I have to say, we did some scrambling and found news accounts of that particular night, what the New York Times said the next day, and people sort of scratching their head about what happened this Christmas Eve in 1914.
I usually do a lot of research. In this case, because it was based on a screenplay, existing material, I had to remain true to that story. But I read like one or two books and did a lot of online search. But, you know, I wrote a piece called Rappahannock County about the Civil War, and I read like 15 books. But
was that too much?
No. You have to read that to get the story. But in this case, the story was already there. The characters were already there. I just had to make them operatic.
Yeah. Well, let me do play another excerpt.
I'm sorry, we had to make them operatic, which includes Bill.
Indeed.
You know, because actors in this case are collaborators.
Right.
Well, and once this, you I guess, began rehearsing,
right.
I'm assuming that's when your collaboration began.
Right. We had about a good four-week rehearsal period, which is long for opera. And it was just amazing. And that's one of the great things about getting to create a new piece is you don't get to ask Mozart what he thought about the aria that you're singing. But we had Kevin and Mark there through the process. And that was amazing. It becomes collaborative in a way that you know, other live theater cannot be.
And did you have
questions
for the composer?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we all did. Sure. And there were times when you realized that, you know, by taking on this character and making him my own in a way, there were things that were going to work in my voice that might not work in someone else's.
Now, one thing that's terrific about working with Bill is that he's done a lot of new operas, and he's concerned about the storytelling. He's not concerned about hitting the high notes of his character. I mean, I'm sure he is concerned about that. But the questions he would ask during this process had to do with the storytelling and making sure it was clear. It was not like, am I going to be center stage?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a terrific joy to be working singers like that.
Mm. Absolutely.
Well, I do want to play another excerpt. This is from the 2011 Minnesota Opera's production of Silent Night. And this is you, Bill. Bill Burden as German soldier Nicholas Sprink. He's an international opera singer as well. Singing an aria, despairing in the German bunker after a battle. It's a very pointed, very moving piece of music. Let's listen.
Anna, meine Anna, ich kann nicht in mein altes Leben zurück. Zu viel. Alles ist nutzlos. Alles. Die Oper, der Gesang. Nutzlos.
Bill Burden as the international opera singer turned German soldier Nicholas Sprink in the opera A Silent Night. And it's just beautiful and heartbreaking, I have to say, to listen to that.
Well, it's an incredible moment in the piece. He's verbalizing his understanding that nothing will ever be the same after what he's been through. And he basically says to Anna, who of course is not there, that I can't go back to my old life. Nothing will be the same.
Anna, my Anna, I cannot go back to my life before. I cannot. I have seen too much. I know too much. Everything is useless. My former career, useless.
Yeah.
That's what you're singing. Powerful words, Mark.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's...
You know what?
It's
thank you. That's very kind. But can you just... I mean... That music, do you hear what he's doing? Do you hear what Kevin's doing with the music? He's sustaining something, and he's allowing the expression to happen. He doesn't force anything. And I was just, every time I listen to this music, I start crying because I cannot believe how brilliant this score is.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because what we hear is just, it's a note sort of underscoring
this
voice.
You know, it's
one
funny.
Low note.
It's funny, often the things that people notice in my music are the things that were easiest to compose, but sometimes they need to be done. Sometimes all you need, I think, is just a single sort of a pitch, and all of Bill's line is just relative to that pitch, and he sort of sings all the other notes around it, and so there's always dissonance and there's always unrest, but that's one of those things that you leave and you don't try too hard as a composer. You leave it to the artist, and you hope you have an artist who can really, you know, make it work. Yeah. And of course, Bill is.
Yeah. And is that a viol? Are we hearing violin? Is that?
Yeah, it's just a viola. It's just the strings just holding. Yeah, it's very simple. Yeah.
It is. Well, let me just quickly reintroduce everybody. We are talking about Silent Night and opera, I should say, because they keep changing their name on me. opera
Now, they've only done it once.
They've only done it once, but it's my first time talking about it. Opera okay. Philadelphia is presenting Silent Night. In fact, it opens tonight at the Academy of Music, and it runs through February 17th. And our guest, Bill Burden, is tenor, and he is performing tonight. He also performed in the Minnesota Opera's 2011 production of Silent Night. It received the Pulitzer Prize last year. Kevin Putz, our guest, composer, recipient of that Pulitzer Prize, and he's also a member of the composition faculty at the Peabody Institute in Baltimore. The librettist, Mark Campbell, with us as well. He's won a number of awards for his work. And we are talking about the creation of Silent Night, the performance of Silent Night as well. And do you see this as an anti-war opera, Mark?
Well, I'm a pacifist by nature, so of course, yes, I do. But I prefer to call it a pro-peace opera. And the opera really does ask the question: once you see your enemy as a human being, as a fellow human being, once you know that they have a daughter or a wife at home or just a beautiful home at home, are you able to put a bullet through their head? And that's really the question that gets asked in Act Two. Act One is moving toward the truce. Act Two is, what do we do now? How are we going to continue this nasty business of war?
Do you think of it that way, Bill?
Absolutely. It's what makes the piece so incredibly relevant is that I think we're able now as a society to look back at World War I and take a much clearer look at things. And I don't think we can yet with a lot of what our nation has gone through, you know, in the more recent past. But we can look at World War I, and I don't think it's a romanticization of this story at all. I think it is simply looking at the fact that war is not something that happens in the abstract. These are real people with real lives and relationships and families and children and jobs, and they're suddenly interacting in a way they were never intended to. And what happens when they see one another in a way that you don't expect?
I ran across a quote from a guy named Murdoch Wood in 1930, and he was one of the participants in this, and he said, the fact is that we did it. And then I came to the conclusion that I have held very firmly ever since, that if we had been left to ourselves, there never would have been another shot fired.
Mm. Oh, that's right. That's the story of Silent Night. That's
absolutely
beautiful.
How about for you, Kevin? I mean, do you see this as a pro-peace or anti-war?
Well, I think it's impossible. You know, I think it's impossible not to be, you know, angry about the wars that we've been involved in recently, and you know, so of course you sort of channel that anger into writing the most powerful piece you can, and making sure that people listen. And I mean, you certainly don't go away from this piece feeling positive about wars.
So. Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone ever could be pro-war.
Yeah, I don't
think
it's
just
either.
So,
I agree.
But a piece like this allows you to see why it is you could never be pro-war.
And it's not dogmatic. I mean, this is not, you know,
right. You're not lecturing people.
Exactly.
But letting them experience.
Yeah, this is all stuff
story.
That actually happened. Yeah. And so we get a chance, we the audience get a chance to look at this piece and be moved by it.
I mean, ultimately, we're focused on the interactions of the characters, you know, the stories of the characters and what happens to them. And that seems to be of the most interest to the audience, you know, what's going to happen to these people.
Well, I do want to play another piece, and again, this is from the 2011 Minnesota Opera's production of Silent Night, and it's an excerpt of some transitional music following Spring's Lament. It takes us through the night into a bright, sunny Christmas morning. Let's listen.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. That's really nice.
Thank you.
Can you talk about composing that? Is it possible to pull out a minute and 21 seconds and talk about how that was composed?
Yeah, I can try. I mean, you know, it's said in the libretto.
That helps, right?
You know, what does it say exactly? I can't remember. It's the morning, the sun rises.
morning turns today, and something about the light is glaring.
Yeah, night turns today. Yeah.
And we had decided that there should be an orchestral interlude here.
Right. You know. So, you know, I began that music with the same notes that Bill begins his aria, which just precedes it. And then, of course, it takes a different path. But and then what happens eventually when it rises up to the biggest sort of moment is that you hear the so-called war theme, which was heard earlier in the opera, but it's been transformed. Mm. And that's one of the fun kind of things about composing, is that you hold on to the material that you're working with, but you alter it. You sort of fit it into whatever emotion the scene dictates. And so you hear that theme that the strings, the violins were playing many other times in the opera, but it always means something different if you just change the notes behind it. And then the last music you heard, that sort of Baroque,
yes,
Bach fugue,
yes.
I just, what I thought needed to happen, what happens in that scene is it's on the German bunker, and Lieutenant Horstmeier, who's sort of the most serious soldier of all these, he's a professional soldier, he's just irate because Christmas trees are being delivered to the front. And what are these doing here? Well, this is war, for God's sake, and they're Christmas trees. And so that's what he sings after that music you heard.
And we're almost having a break here, but I'm curious about how the two of you work together. Would you send lyrics and then he'd send back music, or did you send him the whole thing?
In general, the way I work this way in general is that I supply a complete libretto to the composer, and then they can start, and then they will email me back, or we'll have a meeting, and they'll say, I really like this tune. Could you make these words do this? And usually 95% of the time I say yes. Mm. But I would say, don't you think you set probably about 90% of the libretto as written?
You mean as it was? Yeah.
Yeah, as it was.
I mean, you know, you really need to have the entire thing, at least one act, because you've got to plan the structure of the whole thing. You can't just work song by song. At least I can't. I need to think of the entire structure.
And that's Kevin Putz. He's a composer, also with us, librettist Mark Campbell, and tenor William Burden. And we are talking about Silent Night. Again, won a Pulitzer Prize last year and made its debut in Minneapolis. And it's going to be tonight at the Academy of Music, part of Opera Philadelphia's season. And it runs through February 17th. More music and conversation after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Oriental Rug Room at 10,000 Villages in Ephrata supports WHYY, now hosting their annual rug event, featuring the Fairtrade Bunyad Rug Collection of over 1,500 hand-knotted rugs. Online at rugs.10,000villages.com.
I'm Marty Moscowain. We're in what we hope is the final stretch of the winter membership campaign. If you haven't made a pledge of support, if your membership has lapsed, if you're new to WHYY and new to public media, we need your financial support. That's how we fund about half of what we do here at WHYY. You decide the value and then make a pledge. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499, and you can pledge online at WHYY.org. Today on Radio Times, we're hosting a debate and discussion over the use of drones and targeted killings. That's an issue that's been in the news lately. And we're introducing you to the composer and librettist of the Pulitzer Prize-winning opera Silent Night, and a tenor who's performing at the Academy of Music tonight. Where else do you get that kind of diverse and in-depth programming? Only on WHYY, and because we have the time, only on Radio Times. 1-888-345-9499, WHYY.org. Make that pledge. Thanks so much.
PICO supports WHYY. The PICO Smart Business e-Audit is an online tool that analyzes and estimates business energy usage and provides customized recommendations to help manage energy consumption. Find more at pico.com/smartideas.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with composer Kevin Putz, librettist Mark Campbell, and tenor William Burden. We are talking about Silent Night, the Pulitzer Prize-winning opera, and it's going to be performed tonight here in Philadelphia at the Academy of Music. And I'm curious about, if I can put this to you, Bill, in terms of how you prepare for an opening night. Are there certain things you do special or?
Oh, not really. I've been doing this for a really long time now.
It's not ho-hum, though, is it?
No, it's not at all ho-hum. I used to have all sorts of things, I guess, that I would do kind of traditionally and for good luck and whatnot. And once I was married and had children and realized that there was life going on beyond just the voice, I think a lot of that fell away. And it's my job, but it always is exciting when it's a premiere.
And do you get butterflies or are
absolutely
you beyond that?
I mean,
good, they're good butterflies.
Good butterflies, right. Yeah. And I guess I would be one of those people who would say I'd be a little bit afraid if I wasn't somewhat nervous. But I definitely do still get nervous.
How about for you, Mark? if one of your pieces is about to be performed or premiered?
I definitely get very nervous. I'm usually one of those people who's wearing out the carpet in the lobby.
Pacing?
Pace. And I poke my head in and I try to, manage things with like one glass of wine beforehand. I will say with Silent Night, I am more confident about this piece and I'm prouder of this piece than anything I've written. So it's... I have been able to sit through the entire thing and watch it and love it and feel what the audience is feeling, and that makes me very happy.
That's quite a thing to say, feeling the most proud of
yeah, of instead this. Of nervous. It's a nice feeling.
Yeah. How about for you, Kevin?
Oh, yeah, I get terribly nervous. You know, my hands are cold and clammy, and my heart's racing, and, yeah.
Are you pacing as well?
No,
are you wringing
your
hands?
I try to sit in the audience and, deal with the nerves, but it's out of your control, and you really do actually feel when you've got people like Bill or
Michael Christie conducting.
Right, yeah. You feel very secure, exactly, that's not the case with every performance, certainly. But.
Are you a critic of your own work?
Oh, I'm yes.
Are you?
Oh, I'm a horrible critic. I'm never.
Never satisfied?
Well, I have to say with Silent Night that we had such a great amount of time to work on it with the workshops and, all the rehearsals that we had 3 workshops for this piece. By the time we got into the, close to the premiere, I started to feel really good about it. Like I felt like I've done everything I can do.
I do want to play another piece. Again, this is from the 2011 Minnesota Opera's production of Silent Night. Scottish and French soldiers are at the top of their bunkers, unsure if the truce is a trick. And it's a brief encounter between you, Bill Burden, as Nicholas Sprink, and baritone Tony Cook as the Scottish... Troy Cook as the Scottish soldier. Let's listen to this.
Good evening to the English.
Sprich nicht mit ihnen.
Good evening to the German. But we are not English, sir. We are Scottish. And we would rather die than sing in German.
No. It would probably kill me first if you sang in German.
Was hat er gesagt? Little note of levity there. Making fun of the British?
Well, my last name is Campbell, so
okay.
I've earned it.
Okay.
It does bring up something very significant that's different between the movie and the opera is that both Kevin and I introduced a great deal of humor into the... Not a great deal of humor. It's an organic humor. Mm-hmm. But there are moments when, in order to humanize the story... Humor is the best way to do that, and so we added a few. This line about it would kill me first if you sang in German is not in the screenplay. It's a new line.
Is it? And humor for you as an opera singer is that?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, is that hard? Is that hard to do? Or
I think one of the biggest misconceptions about opera, what serious opera or not, is that it's not hysterically funny a lot of the time. it's when we take ourselves a little too seriously, it stops being interesting.
So it's fun to have a little humor to play with.
Absolutely.
And humor makes the sadder moments sadder.
Right. You know? It all becomes more poignant. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we all deal with humor, and especially in a situation like this when these people are basically introducing themselves to one another.
Mm-hmm. But what's interesting in the true story, as I understand it, and it's also in the opera, which is that after this truce is over, these soldiers are called traitors. I mean, this was, they called what they did dangerous. They get in, you know, trouble with
it was,
with
it was fraternizing with the enemy.
Exactly.
And that was, you know, that's the worst thing by death.
Yeah. It's the worst thing that, you know, that's the worst nightmare of the government is that enemies start to become friends. Mm-hmm. And they realized it in 1914.
Yeah. And I mean, that was true in the real story. And it's certainly true here as well. Let me play another selection. Again, this is Troy Cook, and I apologize for mangling his name. But this is this Minnesota opera production of Silent Night, and it's Troy Cook. He made the debut as the Scottish Father Palmer. He returns to this role in the opera Philadelphia tonight's production of Silent Night. And let's listen, and then we'll talk about this piece of music.
Allez-le. Make me a channel of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me be your love. Where there is
and reading from the libretto, he removes his cross and throws it into no man's land and leaves. Very powerful, Mark.
Yeah, it was a hard moment to write, and it has been misinterpreted as anti-religion. That is not true. It is this character's journey. Father Palmer has been at war. He's seen the worst of it. He's seen two brothers separated by death. One brother, they were very close in Scotland, and one brother is killed. So he's gone through this experience, and then he learns from superiors that he might be excommunicated for promoting peace on the front. So he's not rejecting religion. He's not rejecting God. He's rejecting the notion that religion does not promote peace in World War I. That is what he's rejecting. He says, I can be no part of this if this is what religion is doing.
And to you, Kevin, it's a beautiful piece of music. Again, has that, you know, that very sort of angsty, bitter, sweet, but bittersweet feel to it.
Yeah, it was something that originally I wrote just the underlying hymn that you heard, which is, I think, the prayer of St. Francis.
I'm
sorry. It is a prayer of St. Francis.
I believe that's what it's called. Yeah,
peace prayer of St.
Right,
Francis.
Right, so I wrote my own hymn, but then later decided that it needed to sort of a comment on it. So that's what you hear in the violins. Again, that sort of war theme creeping in, and then that music is then allowed to take over, which was allowed me an easy transition into the music that would accompany his throwing the cross across the stage and walking away from his faith at the moment.
Anyway. Yeah. And I was watching a video of the stage production in Minneapolis, and there's a, I guess, a disc? Is that what?
The center of the stage is a large revolving disc, which is becomes the battlefield. It's the stage for the first
no
sort
man's
of
land.
Opera within an opera. It's No Man's Land. It's the where the Crown Prince has his Christmas Eve party. Mm. It's the sort of center. And then there are three remarkable sort of small replicas of trenches that revolve around that center revolving piece.
And there are bodies as well, are there not?
There are at times. Yes. There are bodies built into the floor of the stage.
And with a moving stage, does it take some agility to...
We were fortunate in Minnesota that the set was actually built inside the rehearsal space, and so we were able to use it. Here in Philadelphia, we had to use a sort of a mock-up of the set in the rehearsal space and then transfer it when we were on stage. But everyone has done remarkably well with a really complicated set.
That's William Burden, tenor, librettist Mark Campbell, and Kevin Putz. And we are talking, and we are talking about Silent Night, which is opening at the Academy of Music tonight, part of Opera Philadelphia season, and it runs through February 17th. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Kevin, you had mentioned earlier that you began composing at the age of 12?
Somewhere around there.
It's actually
interesting. I had a piano teacher who heard me playing around on the piano, and I was, before a lesson, I was making up bagpipe music, believe it or not. We had this...
There are bagpipes in this.
So now I've come full circle. I've arrived. I'm writing real bagpipe music. But anyway, so she heard me improvising and said, what is that? And I said, oh, I'm just making it up. And I guess she thought that was unusual. And so she started giving me little assignments, you know, why don't you compose something called this for next week? And she'd help me notate it. And so that's how I got started, but through playing the piano, really.
Yeah. And how about for you? Have you always been a writer, Mark?
No, I was an actor. I was a really bad actor. And then...
How bad an actor?
Just terrible.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, as an actor, you really have to have confidence in what you project as a person. And I didn't have that. So I wasn't... let's not go into that.
How far did you get acting?
Oh, I don't know. I got my Equity card.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, and I was in New York. And I think it was when I was in New York that I just said, no, you can't compete with these people. So I stopped that. A composer I worked with for a very long time asked me to write lyrics for something. I said, yeah, I would like to try that. I'd written poetry as a kid, and I'd studied playwriting a lot. So I started writing lyrics. And then I wrote lyrics for musicals for a long time and got to a certain point. But it was the first opera in 2002 that I really feel like I found myself as a writer.
And how about for you? When did you begin singing?
I was a boy soprano. I was in the Miami Boy Choir. Growing up.
How old?
And, from about 11 to, sadly, till about 16. I was a very late developer.
Was that a little embarrassing?
Oh, absolutely. But my musical education was terrific in the boy choir. It was really a great experience. And then went to college and didn't study music. And,
what did you study?
Spanish literature. And then went on to Indiana University for a master's degree in voice performance. And that's sort of when I got the opera thing.
So how did you go from Spanish to
Well, there was voice? A fantastic coach who came to Middlebury. I went to Middlebury College and came up to Middlebury and did a little opera workshop. And I was singing then for fun. And he pulled me aside and said, you know, I really think you could do this. And actually suggested my first teacher and mentor, and I studied with her for a decade until she passed on, and now have another fantastic teacher in New York that I work with. But
no one had said that to you before college?
Not really to that degree. So
interesting. Well, I know, and I'm a big movie fanatic. So Kevin and Mark, I know you're working on an opera of the Manchurian Candidate.
Yes, that's right. Also commissioned by Minnesota Opera.
Are you movie crazed?
Oh, I am, absolutely. I love movies, and I know film better than I know opera, actually. But but it's just a great story.
And this is actually based on the book, but the movie is not significantly different from the book. Did I say the movie is not significantly different from the book? But yeah, so it's important to make that distinction.
Yeah. But nonetheless, an interesting idea for an opera.
Yeah.
Manchurian Candidate.
Well, it's fun from the point of view of that it's a thriller, and so it'll be fun to write music which is sort of relentless.
And are you writing that now?
We just had our first meeting. Mark gave me the first draft of the libretto, and so it's great. And we're just, you know, talking about what to do with it.
Yeah, we had our first meeting last week and over lunch, and So we just went over the libretto, and Kevin said, could we do a little bit more of this? Could we do a little less of this? You know, that sort of thing.
And do you already have music
yeah.
rattling around in your head?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
doesn't sound very excited about it.
No,
he
it's
is.
Just that it's,
right.
it's kind of overwhelming because I can't bet. Start on it at the moment. I have other projects to finish first, so that's the only thing.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. My thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times and talking with us about Silent Night. My thanks to you, Mark Campbell.
Thank you.
Kevin Putz, thank you very much
as
well.
Thank you.
William Burden, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscowang. We are closing with the final music of Silent Night.